This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, a look at a documentary that tells the story of letterpress printing. But first, while a recent report shows the number of people who are on the streets or staying at emergency shelters has decreased locally, last year there were still nearly 8,000 individuals counted on the streets, in shelters, and in transitional housing programs in Hamilton County. Joining us to talk about the homeless situation and recent changes in local shelters and programs are Drop-In Center Executive Director Arlene Nolan and Kevin Finn, Executive Director of Strategies to End Homelessness. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Arlene and Kevin, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Kevin, your organization, Strategies to End Homelessness, worked on that survey that showed a decline in the number of people who were staying on the streets or staying in local emergency shelters. How much of a decrease was there actually?
The report showed about a 5% decrease, and actually that data came from organizations like the Drop-In Center that 365 days of the year input information about the people they're serving into a common database, and that's where those numbers came from. So it wasn't a survey, it was actual numbers on people served
okay.
in 2014.
It was a significant drop, though. When was the last time that those figures were that low? It's been several years, hasn't it?
It has been several years since the number was that low, and there are, you know, some factors that go into it, some good news and some bad news that were within those numbers. The number of people served in prevention services has gone way down, which is a very bad thing. But the number of people on the street and in emergency shelters has declined, which is a good thing. We had fewer people in our transitional housing programs, which made that decrease look larger, really, than it was. But we've had a very big increase in the number of homeless people that we have managed to help by putting them into permanent housing. That has been a big increase, so that is also good news.
Now, as far as prevention services, what happened in that case?
Federal funding going
okay.
away. I mean, that the numbers of people served in prevention mirror the fact that the federal funding available for prevention activities has gone way down from a high in 2011 of over 2,800 people getting those kinds of services to just over 650 in 2014.
So, Arlene and Kevin, why do you think we had the good news side of things? Why do we have this decrease?
We'd like to believe it's because we've really within the shelters, really focused on not only people staying, connecting them with services and moving them out of homelessness faster, doing a better job of moving them, transitioning into their own home. So shortening the length of stay within a shelter, but really focusing on placing them into housing and providing those services while they're in housing. That's done. We've done a major push on that part, and it's really helped with lower our numbers within the shelter and keep people out of homelessness.
The Drop-In Center has been absolutely key in doing that and implementing a best practice called rapid rehousing, which is geared toward getting people out of shelter and back into housing and providing them services within housing. The Drop-In Center is our largest rapid rehousing provider for single individuals. Bethany House is the largest rapid rehousing provider for homeless families. And as a result, we have fewer people, I think, getting stuck in homelessness and in places like shelters and on the street. And instead, we're moving them back into housing.
And the goal always is to get people into permanent housing, right, Arlene?
That's our focus. And really, we look at data all the time. Kevin talked about the system that we used. And we put every piece of information we can and really look at that data and see, you know, what are we doing? What can we do better to help people move people out of shelter? We really don't want people staying in a shelter for any length of time and just being able to quickly moving them on and into housing.
Now, Kevin, the Homeless to Homes program was launched in 2010 by the city of Cincinnati and 3CDC and Strategies to End Homelessness. What role has that played in the decline that we've seen?
Well, what actually happened back in 2008, the city of Cincinnati asked us, Strategies to End Homelessness, to do a plan for improving services and the system for homeless individuals. So along with 90 other people, we developed the Homeless to Homes plan. One of the cornerstones of the Homeless to Homes plan was improving the emergency shelter system for single individuals, which had historically been way under-resourced. So organizations like the Drop-In Center, no matter how much they wanted to do more, had never been provided with the resources to necessarily make the kind of changes we've been talking about so far. 3CDC actually, they came along a little bit later but said, hey, we see the recommendations in this plan. We think it sounds like a great idea. How can we help? And they have been an incredible partner in terms of making the new facilities called for in the plan a reality.
Now, despite the good news that we've been getting, though, this is still a critical problem in the Cincinnati area. Can you kind of put it in context for us, Kevin, as to how critical an issue homelessness remains?
You know, homelessness should be and could be a relatively short-term crisis. I mean, people, when they become homeless, tend to be homeless 30 to 40 days. At least that's how long they're in a shelter. And in our prevention programs, we see the same thing. If we can help people for a relatively short period of time, even like 3 months, we can keep them from ever becoming homeless. The problem was that with a system that was so under-resourced and did not have the services available, people were getting stuck in homelessness and were becoming chronically homeless. And in some ways, the longer a person is homeless, the harder it is to get them out of homelessness and back into housing. So the gap we had in our system was that people who were becoming homeless were getting stuck because the shelter system just wasn't set up and wasn't resourced the way it needed to be to help them. And that is really what we are correcting in the new facilities that the Drop-In Center is going to be operating, among others.
The other thing is a system. There's so many different organizations that do different pieces of helping a person experiencing homelessness. And as a system, I think in the last couple of years, we've done a better job of coordinating that care and coming together. And it's our job to connect folks with the resources and the services that they need to help them transition out. And so I think really it's truly a partnership, and we continuously look at and find ways of coming together and doing things differently and stop working in silos. I think that's the worst thing that we could ever do.
Tell me about the Drop-In Center itself, Arlene. What's its history and how big of a facility is this?
Drop-In Center has had a long history of serving single men and women experiencing homelessness. We have 40 years of doing this in mostly downtown in Over the Rhine, and we've largely been at one facility, and that's at the corner of 12th and Elm. We serve the vast majority of the people. It's about 60% of the single men and women experiencing homelessness. That's about 2,000 people every year that comes through our shelter. Yeah. It's a lot of folks, and we do it in a very unique way. We allow for overflow. So with the need, we'll expand beyond our 222 beds. And it's been a real challenge for us in our current location because it's a pretty small facility. And we decided a few years ago that, you know, we really want to do a job of accommodating folks. And we decided to work with 3CDC on these two new facilities, a separate single facility for women and a totally separate one for men. And pleased to announce that our women's facility will be opened up next week to receive 60. We have a 60-bed facility. We currently have 42 beds at the Drop-In Center right now for women, and we're in a constant state of overflow. We talk about the numbers being reduced over the last couple of years, but that's one population where our numbers have grown, and that is single women experiencing homelessness.
And this new center is the Esther Marie Hatton Center for Women, right?
Correct. Okay. That is what we are naming the facility.
Okay. Tell us a little bit more about what kinds of programs and services it's going to be offering.
We, as I say, it's a 60-bed facility. We are open and we accommodate folks on demand. So we will do intake 24/7. The facility allows us to provide day programming. So we are working with our partners, with our volunteers and donors on making sure that we have services and groups and activities throughout the day. Services that will help people address the reasons why they became homeless in the first place, as well as increase case management. Case management is key in helping women get out of homelessness, find an apartment, get up back on their feet, you know, just moving them towards self-sufficiency.
Now, later this year, then it's the Dave and Rebecca Barron Center that's going to be opening. And
that's correct.
That's for men, right?
That is a 150-bed men's facility located in Queensgate. You talk about how different these facilities are. We probably these it's about four times as large as the current site as we have now. So, you know, enough space to serve people in the way in which we want to serve men and women.
While these will be, I mean, I've seen them, they're going to be very impressive facilities. I think in to some extent, the big change for our system is even less about the new building than it is about what the building houses. Mm-hmm. So historically, the drop-in center and the City Gospel Mission, which opened its new facility in April, they have not had the physical space to provide the kind of services they would like to provide to the people they were sheltering. So what will be really great about these facilities will be all of the day services and all the things that will be happening on site that there just wasn't room for at the old locations.
More importantly, you know, we don't do this alone. We really depend on our partnerships and the volunteers and donors that help us serve our folks and just being able to house all of the people that help us do what we do is so important.
Now, the drop-in center is also undergoing a name change, right?
Correct.
It'll become Shelter House?
Shelter House. Okay. Our corporate name is actually Shelter House Volunteer Group. And, you know, our doing businesses has always been Drop-In Center. But we felt like Drop-In Center doesn't speak to what we do now. We are so much more than just a place you stop by or drop off. We provide all these services, comprehensive services and resources to help you address your homelessness. And we wanted to make sure that our name speaks to who we are and what we do.
Okay, so the idea is that this is going to reflect your work much better than the old name.
That's the idea.
We will continue our conversation about the homeless situation in Greater Cincinnati, and you can join us by calling us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to talk about the homeless situation and recent changes in local shelters and programs are Drop-In Center Executive Director Arlene Nolan and Kevin Finn, Executive Director of Strategies to End Homelessness. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Arlene, tell us a little bit more about the Hatton Center. We know the programs and the number of beds. What is this facility going to be like?
This facility is located on Reading Road, very close to the downtown area. It is, as I said, a 60-bed, 20,000-square-foot facility. It's co-located on a campus, if you will. Our neighbor is the Anna Louise Inn, which is permanent supportive housing for women. The facility is beautiful. Obviously, it's brand new. It is, you know, right now, all the women sleep in a dormitory-style sleeping area. We have about 24 beds on the upper level. Obviously, much more space for everybody. We have a clinic within the facility. It's called the Deaconess Health Check, which will be staffed by medical volunteers. And we just have enough space, whether it's classrooms, group rooms, for us to deliver services and invite our partners to deliver those services as well. It's a beautiful site, as well as, not to mention, a 9,000 square foot courtyard for the women to be when they're not in groups or getting services.
And as Arlene mentioned before, I mean, they've been running beyond their 42-bed capacity for women at their current facility for years, it seems like. So increasing to 60 beds will be much more the right size for the women's homeless population that we have. And then, you know, a large percentage of our homeless population, including women, are disabled. And permanent supportive housing is specifically for people who are both homeless and disabled. So the fact that we will be able to meet the needs of women on that campus with emergency shelter and services within the shelter, and then even the possibility that they could go right next door for permanent supportive housing in the case of women who are also disabled, will be a significant improvement in what is available. Currently, we even have some issues where it's difficult if women have been victimized, have been victims of domestic violence or things like that, where sometimes they're reluctant to come into the system at all when the system serves men and women sort of closely together. So having this campus specifically meeting the needs of homeless women will make it much easier to reach out to women who are in need of services and to provide them with those services. Well,
one of the things that Kevin mentioned is how we're in a constant state of overflow. And I think that's, even though it's one of the unique things that we do, last night we had 51 women there and we only have 42 beds. So just allowing us to accommodate that overflow in a really wonderful, you know, good, safe way is really what best practice for us.
And in many ways, I can't resist saying that, you know, in some ways people don't maybe appreciate the uniqueness of the drop-in center and the very special place it holds in our system, in that the drop-in center is the one place that won't just turn people away if they're sort of at their stated capacity. The drop-in center, to some extent, serves as the safety net for our entire homeless services system. Not unheard of for families and other people that the drop doesn't really serve to show up there, but the drop-in center really is that safety net for our system.
So you'll always find a way then.
We always will, beyond our 60 beds.
513-419-7100. Let's talk with Gabe and Clifton. Hi, Gabe. Hello, Gabe. Are you there?
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Hi. Basically, I am a medical student at the University of Cincinnati, and the medical students actually do some volunteering to help run a clinic at the drop-in center.
Correct.
And what I want to speak to is just sort of the challenges that the different organizations that offer services to low-income individuals and homeless individuals face in sort of coordinating different services to provide the best outcomes for these residents and these people that are utilizing these services. From my experience, you know, it's been very challenging not only educating the people that come into the drop-in center seeking, you know, assistance and advice about their health, but it's also very difficult in, you know, contacting the correct organizations, directing people to the right places. Different places have different hours, and, you know, it all just compounds the problem that you guys were talking about earlier as far as coordinating services and coordinating care to provide optimal outcomes.
I totally agree with Gabe, and that is where we're heading. And we need to do a better, even better job as a system helping connect those resources and services to our residents. I mean, we're constantly looking with internally at how we can do a better job of informing our residents of what services are out there and resources. That speaks to additional case managers that I was talking about. We're looking at, can we use technology to help empower our residents, to give them this information. Gabe is spot on. The services are out there. The resources are out there. It's just that connectivity.
Well, and coordination is not something that we're going to be done with anytime soon. I mean, my organization was just founded in 2000 and began operating in 2008. And our goal really is to coordinate the system of services. So, you know, we started out with those who sort of shared some funding streams in common and then branched out to other homeless service organizations that were not necessarily funded with those dollars. But, you know, I'm meeting with people in Northern Kentucky later this week to talk about coordination of homeless services, because it takes all of about 10 minutes for a homeless person to walk across the river. We have people that the nature of homelessness is that people get sort of drawn into the nearest urban core. So, you know, Claremont, Butler, Warren counties, I mean, these are levels of coordination that will take years for us to accomplish, but which we're going to have to get into if we're ever really going to end homelessness.
Is that coordination the top key, Kevin? Is that the big thing?
I think it is, because at the very least, right off the bat, it frees up resources. If you have two entities doing the exact same thing in an uncoordinated way, it is guaranteed that you are wasting at least some level of resource. And if you can recapture what's being wasted, you can serve more people. You know, for a great example from the data from last year, we have seen a 167% increase in people provided with permanent housing over the last handful of years, with only 34% more funding. So it really is significant to make the best use of the resources, and coordination is what gets us to that best use of resources.
I totally agree with Kevin. You know, just like we don't provide medical services, but we partner with people like UC Residency Program or with the Cincinnati Health Network to deliver those services. You know, we really to optimize our donors and funding in the city, it's about those partnerships.
Let's talk with Mike in Loveland. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon. I just have a quick question. Oftentimes when I'm downtown, I encounter people who say they're homeless. What is the best thing that person out? Is it give them money, or is it...
Okay, so the question is, what's the best course of action? Because the phone line was breaking up a little bit. Best course of action for panhandlers, homeless or otherwise? How do you really help them?
Well, I would point toward a resource that I found recently. I think it was called the Center for Community-Oriented Policing released a report in the last couple years in which they estimated that 8% of panhandlers were actually homeless. So the first thing I would say is, don't believe what the sign says if the person is flying a sign, because very often they're indicating something that isn't 100% true. More often than not, they're not homeless. So to some extent, I think Arlene and I both get asked about panhandling a lot. But to a very large extent, it's not a homelessness issue, because most often they're not homeless.
I would agree. And I would direct people to the resources that are available for them to access. Obviously, it's your money and you can do what you choose with it, but there are a vast array of resources for them to access.
But if you give your money to an organization like the Drop-In Center, you know, at the end of the year, they issue reports and this, that, and the other about where those dollars went. I personally think that's a much better use of someone's funding.
Well, Arlene and Kevin, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Drop-In Center Executive Director Arlene Nolan and Kevin Finn, Executive Director of Strategies to End Homelessness. Coming up, we'll look at the art and craft of letterpress printing.